Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Welcome to Murder
and Mimosas,
a true crime podcast brought to you by a mother and daughter duo,
bringing you murder stories with a mimosas in hand.
Just a quick disclaimer before we get started. Our show is Murder and Mimosas, a true crime podcast. This means that we do discuss crimes, including but not limited to disappearances, murder, and sexual assault. All our episodes are told with the respect of the victims and the victims' families in mind. We strive to ensure that we provide factual information, but some information is more verifiable than others. With that, grab your mimosas and let's dive in.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back, or welcome for the first time. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Danica.
Today, we're going to take you into the wild journey of former Canadian Air Force Colonel Russell Williams. So you sip while we share. This is going to be a little different today. Normally, we take turns researching a case and the other is hearing it for the first time, too. This one I remember from years ago, and Danica recommended this book on our 25 Days of True Crime books. This one stuck with me because I'm always looking for the why, and honestly, I still just don't see it in this one, but let's dive in. So, David Russell Williams was born in England on March 7th, 1963. Russell's father was hired as a Canadian nuclear research at a Canadian nuclear research laboratory, which of course the family moved there for the position. After this relocation, the Williams family met another family they became close with, the Sovaks. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but unfortunately, Russell's parents divorced when he was just 6 years old, and soon after this, his mother married Dr. Jerry Sovak, of course.
So that's odd, but the divorce came about because Mr. Williams began an affair with Miss Sovak. So we're doing like a whole wife swap thing before the show ever aired.
Right. That had to be very confusing for Russell and his brother. And Russell's father took a job in New York, though. And that was pretty much, you know, he was out of the boy's life. He was far away in a different country. So during this time, Russell and his brother took their stepfather's name and moved to Ontario.
And from what I understand, they weren't like adopted by him legally, but their mother wanted the appearance of like the perfect family and wanted them to all have the same last name. And this also kept others from having questions about their father.
So by 1979, his family moved to South Korea when his stepfather got a new position. Russell completed his final 2 years of high school at a boarding school at UCC while his parents were in South Korea. Russell then went on to get his bachelor's degree in economics and political science at the University of Toronto.
So in high school, a lot of people didn't even remember Russell because he was just so introverted. He didn't make a lot of friends. In fact, like the teams he was on, no one even remembered him when people asked about him later.
So he stood out a little bit more in college. He arrived first at his dorm. By the time all his roommates had gotten there, he had taken the liberty of making a rotating chore chart for his roommates. He was very organized and a bit of a control freak. He also had a long-term relationship with a lady there for 2 years. A friend of his said he didn't take the breakup well at all. And as far as he knew, he didn't date again for like 8 years. This same friend said once they graduated, Russell informed him he thought he wanted to go into the Air Force and be a pilot.
And like, I think this is the time that Top Gun was like a big hit and the number in the military rose a lot, right?
Right, it definitely did. And Top Gun was the Navy rather than the Air Force, but I think the movie just made being a pilot look sexy, which if you watch the movie, I mean, you get it. So Russell joins the Air Force and becomes a pilot, but not a fighter pilot. He chauffeurs people like the Prime Minister, dignitaries, even the Queen at one point.
R.I.P.
There were only 12 positions like this in the military. But this also gave him the opportunity to like see the world. He had a pretty nice lifestyle since the military would pay for hotels when they had more than a 6-hour layover. So he was getting to see quite a bit of things.
Right. And this wasn't like being thrown in the desert, having shots fired at you. So, I mean, he had it made. He also met his wife about 3 years into his military career. Her name was Mary Elizabeth.
His friends didn't even know he was dating again, though, and he asked him to, like, be his best man at his wedding. But just imagine the surprise when you're like, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Mary Elizabeth was 5 years older than him, and her father was in the military as well. Mary Elizabeth takes a job as a lobbyist with the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and the couple buy a home in Ottawa. People say that Mary Elizabeth was more outgoing than Russell, and while they seemed to have a good marriage, they didn't really show a lot of PDA or get very mushy, which, I mean, that's fine. There's plenty of people that don't do that.
Yeah, but what is odd to me is everyone said they never shared anything about their personal lives. Like, it was always just very surface-level small talk.
That was odd to me, too, but maybe it's the military life. I don't know. But I mean, that does go back to, you know, his college roommate not even knowing that he's dating.
Yeah, maybe he just doesn't know how to get deep.
Yeah. So Russell was once again promoted and moved to the base in Trenton. This was a 3-hour drive Russell was making for a while. He and Mary Elizabeth decided rather than her giving up her job, they would buy a second home in Cozy Cove so Russell wouldn't have to commute. And then one of them would travel each weekend, you know, take turns. Usually it was Mary Elizabeth that came to see him because they had a very cute, charming cottage on the lake in Tweed, and they bought that in 2004. Many weekends, Mary Elizabeth would just head down there. She would read while Russell would fish. And Danica, I actually thought this was odd when I first heard this. I mean, why not just move with him? But then I realized both sets of your grandparents had that kind of same setup. And my parents didn't see each other every weekend because my dad was out of state, but it's the same concept.
True. And it doesn't really occur to me either, but there are a ton of couples that make that work. People like on the oil rigs or, I mean, military, where they have to get deployed for long amounts of time, and they don't even see each other on the weekends. It's months. So, I mean, if they can make that work, I don't see why you can't do every other weekend.
Right.
Or every weekend, I guess.
So, we wouldn't be talking about Russell if something didn't change. So, let's get into that.
What? I thought we were just going to talk about this man's life and how cool he was.
So, it's Saturday, September 8th, 2007. Russell is at their home in Cozy Cove, and their next-door neighbors, Ron and Monique Murdoch, are gone for the weekend. The couple have a teenage daughter, and Russell and Mary Elizabeth had gotten to know the family fairly well over the years.
Actually, funny enough, their teenage daughter had done a paper for school on Russell as someone that she admired.
Yes, which makes all this even more frightening to me and just creepy. So Russell crept over to their house around 9:30 that night and found a door unlocked and let himself in. He went into the teen girl's room and began rummaging through her underwear drawer. Oh, and by the way, he brought his camera along with him. He begins taking pictures of her underwear, her clothes in her closet, and even her bed.
Okay, creepy, but I'm going to see your creepy and raise the stakes, okay? Because as creepy as that sounds, he strips down naked, gets a pair of the girl's pink panties out, and takes a selfie in the mirror of himself wearing them with his erect penis.
I guess this... Okay, so I was going to say this, but I'm about to get you even more. So I guess this got him pretty turned on because he got on her bed and masturbated and videoed himself doing this. So, got you again.
Okay, fair enough. You won that one.
He then gets out more of her underwear and training bras. And he wears them, takes more selfies. He was at the house about 3 hours and took 36 pictures, and some of those included him ejaculating on some of the teen girl's belongings, as well as 6 pair of her panties he kept as souvenirs. This was the weekend, and I'm not sure if Mary Elizabeth was home.
Not sure either, but she would later tell the police that Russell was like an avid runner, which he was, and he would go for long jogs at night. So it may be that she was there, but didn't really think anything about him being gone for a while.
It seems like an odd time to jog to me, but I am not a jogger, so I can't really say for sure. Plus, I'm a woman, and I wouldn't feel safe jogging at night anyway. So the neighbors didn't notice anything amiss when they returned. Monique's mother had been ill and passed away. When they left again out of town for the funeral, Russell broke in again. He did basically the same thing, but all his photos are date and time stamped, and he either stayed the night there or he came back the next morning for more. He also took pictures of himself outside in the woods, adorned in her undergarments and masturbating again. He broke in again later that night and had more morbid fun doing the same thing.
So all of this is creepy to me. He's even more brazen when they come back and he heads over to offer his condolences to the family for Monique's mother passing. Bree was just all up in their house violating their daughter's privacy.
Yes, I guess he just needs to, you know, stay low on the radar, which he was. He was a very well-respected man in the community. So he begins using his jogs to stake out the area. He watches to see what women are single, what are their schedules, if they're married, when are their husbands not at home. He begins breaking into other homes and taking women's underwear. Most of these go unnoticed, and the ones that were reported, I mean, are police really going to be out canvassing the neighborhood and search for your panties?
Right, and even for the ones who noticed, how embarrassing is it to call in if my panties were stolen? I mean, he didn't take that many, and he tried not to mess anything up, so many didn't know until after he was caught that they had been a part of this.
I also want to mention, when I first saw this case, I was really confused about Russell's sexual orientation. I was thinking that the woman's underwear and wearing it was what was turning him on, and I remember thinking, dude, just go to the store and buy some. And we'll get into that some more, because that wasn't really the case for him. So Russell ends up with 33 break-ins, and they have gone off without a hitch for the most part. But it's starting to become boring to him. The thrill isn't quite what it used to be. So he breaks into another house in October of 2008. Twice that weekend, in fact, and this time he wants them to know he's been there. He leaves a window open in the basement, even though that's not even how he came in, and he leaves many shoe prints, and he left a message on one of the girls' computers.
How do you think the world will end? Alien invasion? Nuclear disaster? Another more deadly pandemic? I'm Jackie Moranti, and I'm the host of Cause of Death, 100 Seconds to Midnight. I talk about the things that could obliterate mankind. I call it pre-apocalyptic nonfiction. The doomsday clock was set at 100 seconds to midnight from January of 2020 to January of 2023. On January 24th, 2023, the Board of Atomic Scientists moved the hands of the clock even closer to midnight. Now, it's set at 90 seconds to midnight, the closest it's ever been. From nuclear disaster to environmental threats to food and water crises, find out how mankind is destroying itself 1 second at a time. If you haven't listened to my podcast, you should.
Thinking about all this, I guess the others never noticed the semen in their rooms, but that was pretty cocky.
Pun intended.
Leaving behind his DNA.
True, but most didn't know he was there, so they're probably wondering, what's this dried up crap, and just cleaned it, especially these young girls who don't even know what semen looks like. Oh, and I forgot to mention, he isn't breaking in just around Cozy Cove anymore. He's also breaking in around his other home in Ottawa. So the more brazen he got, the more reports were filed when people realized someone had been in their home. The news was reporting to make sure, keep your doors locked, keep your windows locked. There's a prowler about. And neighborhoods began to start keeping a better watch out. This letter was left at, or he was going to leave this at the house. And Russell wrote this letter on his computer when the police confiscated it and assumed he was going to leave it and try to deflect the suspicion to a teen. But Danica, do you want to read this letter?
Okay. Insert beautiful girl's name. I'm sorry I took these because I'm sentimental too. Don't worry because I didn't mess with them. Also, I'm sure you know you're beautiful, but trust me, you are something. Smells effing awesome. I should know because I've been doing this for a while, but I'm going to stop because my mom will effing kill me if I get caught. She is pretty sure I can be something. Beside, your place was kind of the mother load, and I really like that I have a bunch of undies you put on just after you got effed. I started this with a chick I knew from high school called Blank, who lives down the road from you. Thought it would be super cool to have some of her undies. It seems right that I finished with a special chick like you. If you decide to call the cops, tell them I'm sorry for the trouble, and they won't hear from me again. Now that I know all about you, I think it might be cool to meet you. Maybe younger guys don't turn you on, but I think we could be good together. To me, teenage chicks are impressed too easily. I guess I would like to be with somebody more experienced. You guys really need to clean out the bath in the basement. It is gnarly. I hope what I did ain't pissed you off too much. JT. P.S. Since I sort of feel guilty about wasting the cops' time, these are the places I hit so they can close their book. And then he listed them up to that point.
So he began to want more and broke into a house while a woman was in the shower. But he didn't just break in. He had been in the woods behind her house naked and decided to break in when she got in the shower. As we know, these things usually progress. And in September of 2009, Russell was no longer content with what he was doing. He broke into a house where a mother was home alone with her baby. She was in bed when he woke her up by covering her face. He told her to roll over to her stomach, in which he hit her in the head 3 times. He blindfolded her and tied her hands. She asked, was he going to rape her? And he said, no. He got his camera out and he began taking photos of her. He pulled her top down and began fondling her breasts while taking pictures. Then he raped this poor young mother. He took photos for a while and she asked, would he please not leave her naked when he was leaving? And he helped get her clothes back on before he left. He told her to count to 300 before she removed her blindfold. And she began counting. And when she was sure he was gone, she called the police. There was another woman in the area. He broke into her home and tied her up. He led her to believe he had 2 other men with him that were stealing and rifling through the house. So she did tell them that her head was hurting and asked for some medicine, which she obliged. She even loosened her hand ties that she said were too tight. She told him there was more material in the bedroom and he got some and added it to the restraints so they could be loosened. And then he cut her shirt with a knife right down the middle and took pictures of her and eventually raped her. He asked her before all this, would she give him 30 minutes to escape? And she said, yes, she would. He left her blindfolded and her hands tied and he left.
All of this is extremely sinister, but also some is pretty predictable too. What is so unusual to me, at times he can be really nice with these women and see these people as people and not objects. But then on the other hand, he's like hitting them in the head, he's raping them. And as we both know, from this point, he will only progress further and likely pretty quickly.
Yeah, he did do this pretty quickly, which shocked me. So Russell meets a woman on the base that he finds attractive, and he uses his military ability to enter the military database and gets her address. This was 38-year-old Corporal Marie France Como. He breaks into her home like the others and steals some of her underwear, but he's casing the place out because he has plans to come back. And he does come back a week later. And this is November of 2009. So when he does come back, he's hiding in the basement waiting for her to fall asleep. He's brought his rape kit Kit, I'm sorry, while waiting for her to fall asleep, and he puts a cap and face mask on so he can't be identified. When Marie France comes down looking for her cat, she ascends down the stairs calling her cat's name. She finds her cat at the bottom of the stairs, but she finds way more than she bargained for. Russell was behind the furnace and came out with his flashlight, striking her in the head. The blow didn't put her down, and she began to fight, but she was hit more times in the head until she fell to the floor. Once she was down, he tied her hands to restrain her and covered her mouth with duct tape. Marie France was already naked, other than this shawl she had wrapped around her when she came down the stairs. He, of course, began to take pictures of his victim on the floor, bloody and helpless. He replaced the screen back on the basement window that he had come through, and he broke a key off in the lock on the front door, so if anyone had a key and came in or tried to come in, they wouldn't be able to get in with the door locked or jammed up in the door. He put additional coverage on the windows with a comforter and steak knives. He turned all the lights out through the house. He got her up and was taking her up the stairs. He removed the tape from her mouth and advised her, do not scream. Once she got to the top of the stairs, probably sensing what was coming, she did begin to scream. But he took her head and smashed it into the drywall. This knocked her unconscious and he left her there on the floor. But of course, he had the urge to take pictures of her again, nude, bloody body, lying there unconscious. He carried her to the room and he got a towel to soak up the blood from the bleeding on her hand. He got his recorder, sat it on his tripod, undressed, and began his reign of terror on her.
This girl was tough. When she came to, she yelled, she fought, she begged him to leave, but of course it fell on deaf ears. He raped her repeatedly while he took pictures with his camera, and he also had a video camera, like Shannon said. She actually eventually died that night when the duct tape was covering both her mouth and nose, and she was no longer able to breathe. However, he continued his pictures and videos even after she died. Then he got the sheets from the bed, put them in the washer with a bottle of bleach, and left out the patio door, which he left unlocked.
This just shocks me how fast he went from the panty thief to rape to murder after having no criminal past that we know of for 44 years. He also drove to work after all this with absolutely no sleep. He turns his BlackBerry back on. He burns his shoes and rope. But no one noticed anything was off about him when he came to work that day.
What's odd is he felt the need to cover his face when he was going to kill her, which makes me think that maybe things escalated, and I don't really know that it was his intent to kill her, but he told the police he had to kill her because she worked at the base and was able to identify him.
Maybe part of his alter ego. I don't know, but yeah, that was my thought too. Why does he need to cover his face if he wasn't going to kill her? So his next victim was 27-year-old Jessica Lloyd. He had scoped her out and knew she lived alone. While she was out, he parked in a field close by her house and entered in the patio door and sat waiting for her. Of course, he brought along his rape kit and toys. Jessica got home about 10:30 that night and got ready for bed. As she lay in her bed, Russell came in with his mask covering his face and tells her not to scream or look at his face. He tied her to the bed and covered her eyes with duct tape. He took out his knife, sliced her tank top down the middle, exposing her breast. He then pulled her pants and underwear down and began barking orders for her to pose for his various pictures. Jessica tried to appease him. This intruder, hoping not to upset him at all, I mean, she's just trying to do anything he can to make him happy. So maybe he would let her go. Although she was doing all he told her to do, he gets zip ties out of his bags and put them around her neck. He told her if he pulled them, she would die. Her torture continued until Russell was startled by a noise and stopped and looked around. He asked Jessica if she had a cat, and she said no, that this was just her stomach making noise. He turns off the camera and packs his rape kit up and his victim and takes her to his house at Cozy Cove. Once there, he has her in the shower. And of course, he gets in the shower with her and he's videotaping all this. Jessica asks for clothes once they're out of the shower and tells him she isn't feeling well. She then proceeds to have a seizure and asks for medical help. He denies her that, but he does give her clothes and he allows her to rest for an hour before he begins the torture again.
What a gentleman. Worst of it, that she says, if she dies, please tell her mom she loves her, which breaks my heart. He's not worried about medical help because he plans on being the one to take her life.
Yes, and he made her model tons of lingerie as he played photographer, as if all this was some kind of exciting Victoria's Secret photo shoot. So he rapes her, performs sex acts on her, and forces her to perform sex acts on him. He then tells her he's going to take her home. She is still blindfolded, and he has her in the garage. He hits her with the same flashlight he used before and knocked her out. She fell to the ground. He went down and put rope around her neck, and once her body stopped spasming, he knew she was dead. She had spent 22 hours with this monster. Russell cleared the floor but left her in the garage while he changed and left for work. He had a flight out the next morning at 5:30.
That part still baffles me. He seemed to get so sloppy. He knew his wife came to the cabin sometimes. I can't believe he just left her on the garage floor and then went to work.
Yeah, there is so much about all of this that completely baffles me. So her family reported her missing and the police did their due diligence and took prints of the tire tracks in the field by her house. They put up a roadblock and they're getting tire prints from anyone going through. One of those people that go through happened to be Russell. They call him and he says he'll come in Sunday at 3 to talk to the police. On his arrival, he's questioned by this very soft-spoken detective, Jim Smith. And Danica, I don't think you saw any of that, so let's play a little bit of this interview.
Do you remember how you found out?
I don't know. I sent an email. Well, as soon as the ops staff in the base were, they told me.
Okay.
So I got an email. I can't remember if it was late at night or in the morning. But certainly I saw it, I want to say, first thing in the morning because I had just come back from Ottawa. I was in Ottawa for, I said, I mean, some of the days. What day we talked about it, but obviously my people get killed, that gets your attentions.
Absolutely.
I'm very sure of it.
And how did you know where your friends go?
I only met her once. She was on a crew that I was on just after I got to the base.
Okay.
Russell looks so relaxed in there. He's just chewing his gum. He's really chill. Like, he doesn't look nervous or anything.
Right. So, yes, and the whole time, the interview is like this. I mean, there's no good cop, bad cop like you see on TV. He sometimes lets him sit there in silence for long periods of time without talking. And he just really amazes me. He does finally get Russell to talk. But first, Russell says he wants to make this as easy as possible for his wife.
Oh, yeah, because they just built a dream house. He was worried about the police trash the place and upsetting his wife.
He tells Detective Smith where he can find Jessica, and we see how meticulous he is. He says, like, 7 kilometers off the road or something to that effect, and that is exactly where she was. Of course, Russell didn't just come out with all this. He had been in there for almost 4 hours by then, and they had evidence of the tire tracks. They confirmed that with him. They took his boot to compare a print that they took from the scene. And this brazen nut wore the exact same boots to the station he wore to kill Jessica. And of course, they matched the ones from the crime scene. So Detective Smith did ask why at one point. And Russell says he doesn't really think the why really matters. He tells Detective Smith where everything is at both homes just to make things easier on them finding things and honestly think to keep them out of his wife's way.
So let's talk about real quick what they did find. 8 bags. One bag had 93 pairs of panties and a slip in it. Bag 2 had 4 camisoles, 6 tops, 13 dresses, and a shirt. Bag 3 had 2 bathing suits, 2 bikini bottoms, 8 pairs of panties, a single pair of tights, 18 camisoles, a pair of fishnet stockings, a single garter belt. Bag 4 had a nightgown, 2 pairs of panties, 2 camisoles, and a slip. Bag 5 had 25 pairs of panties. Bag 6 had 35 pairs of panties. Bag 7 had 67 pairs of panties, 3 bathing suits, 2 bras, 1 bikini top, and 2 socks. Bag 8 had 49 bras. These are just bags around the house. Some of these were in the cabinet in the laundry room. This was not just at the cottage, but at the new house too. Like, how on earth can you have all this? Plus more we will get into, and his wife doesn't know.
Those are my thoughts too. Maybe she wasn't as nosy as you and I are. Maybe she really trusted him. Who knows? Or also, she could have found these things and thought he's having an affair or he's a cross-dresser, but she didn't want to mess up her life or her persona because, I mean, there are plenty of women who do that, just look the other way.
That's true.
She had never really said much other than she didn't have any knowledge of any of this. She hasn't spoken to the police other than the little bit that she did give them, but she's never spoke to anybody about her sex life or what that was like. And she hasn't wanted to be in the media at all, which I totally get.
Yeah, I can understand that too. Like, it has to be embarrassing and then also shameful. So they only seized a book titled Guide to Lockpicking, a camera, a black skull cap, computers, more underwear, among other things. The computer, though, was a wealth of information. We've talked about how meticulous he is. And on this computer, they find each break-in in his notes with timestamped pictures. He has videos of what occurred, folders for each break-in, and each has a title and police reports or whatever is going to that house. That's how they found out about all the break-ins. And so many people were shocked to know, like, about these. And this is also where they find all the pictures of him and women's underwear, too.
Hello, my spooky friends. This is your host, John, from Dairyland Frights, the paranormal podcast that covers everything spooky, creepy, and mysterious in the Midwest.
This is actually John. I hope my spooky voice scared you. And in this podcast, we're going to have creepy guests and spooky tales and mysterious sightings of cryptids, UFOs, ghosts, and everything paranormal. So tune in if you dare to be scared.
Which one thing in the interview with Detective Smith is Russell says this to Detective Smith. I hope you will be discreet with all of this because once the rumor mill starts, it's hard to stop something like that. And so can you imagine how embarrassed he has to be of all of these pictures coming out for his coworkers? And he's this macho colonel man and they're all seeing this.
No, can't do the time. Don't do the crime.
Yes, so he doesn't want to go to jail and have everything out in the open. He pleads guilty, but once he's in jail, he did try to kill himself. He sticks toilet paper rolls down his throat and writes a suicide letter in mustard on the wall. But the guard hears him in there gasping for breath, and then he's now put on a suicide watch. Honestly, everyone is shocked. No one can believe this man was capable of any of this. He had everyone fooled, and that gets me. I mean, what happened at 44 to change him? Maybe he always had these desires, and something just overpowered him. There have been a lot of people that would love to get into his head, and I would be one of them.
While he did give them all the details, he seems like the type of guy that isn't going to let you into his head. He almost seems like analytical and data-driven, the way he like keeps all these files. Which makes it almost feel like there's no emotion behind it. But there has to be emotion somewhere that caused what happened.
So one thing I learned through all of this is the difference with the fetish and
paraphilia.
Paraphilia. I was confused, as I said before, back when I first learned about this case. I was thinking that this fetish is off the charts, but a fetish is actually a sexual attraction to an object. Paraphilia is when someone's recurrent sexual urges cause them significant impairment or cause them to interfere with the rights of others, and their desires is often deemed a paraphilia, according to David Gibb and the book Camouflage Killer.
Some have said it could have been the high dosage of his arthritis medication he was on that altered his brain. Dr. Michael Stone thinks Russell maybe suffered from narcissistic personality disorder and probably had from a young age. Roy Hazelwood thinks he suffers a malignant narcissism. Many want to study him, but only can from far away. I think the reason we all find him so fascinating in a way is because he doesn't fit the true crime mold that we are used to. We don't see a lot of the abuse or, you know, things like that. And he didn't have a petty criminal record for years and
being a peeping Tom, getting caught.
Yeah.
So he was sentenced to 2 life sentences, but is up for parole after 25 years. The military requested all his uniforms and medals back from his wife, and they usually recycle these uniforms, but not in this case. They burned his. They destroyed all his medals he was ever given, and they feel duped by him as well.
I know we're probably preaching to the choir, but be sure to lock your doors and windows. That's how he usually got in, and how a lot of home invaders do. We always recommend more bubbly
and less OJ.
Cheers! If you'd like to see pictures from today's episode, you can find us at murder.mimosas on Instagram. You can also find us at murder.mimosas on TikTok, Twitter. And if you have a case you would like us to do, you can send that to murder.mimosas@gmail.com. And lastly, we are on Facebook at Murder and Mimosas Podcast, where you can interact with us there. We love any type of feedback you can give us, so please rate and review us on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.